Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where we chat to women who have achieved great things and possibly make us think differently about our own lives. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Lisa Palmer. Hello and welcome, Lisa.
Hello. Hi, thank you for having me.
Lisa is an entrepreneur and well-known relationship and dating expert, a life coach and image consultant turned author who helps clients, including the rich and famous, find their elusive ideal match. So, Lisa, what an exciting life you have. And you have a brand new book out that has been described as the Bridget Jones of dating, called The Secret to What Men Really Want. So what is the secret to what men really want? Because I'm sure our female listeners are dying to know.
Well, there's quite a lot of detail in the book, you know. As you say, I've interviewed thousands and thousands of men over the years, and obviously got different types of men and different ages, but I just sort of had to get into their mindset of what they're thinking and what they want and what they're looking for. I mean, it's some of it's quite similar, you know, but I kind of like go down to three areas, which I call BEEB, which is bits, ego and belly. So and kind of all those three things, you know, are very important to a male. Obviously, I mean, there's a lot more. So with the male, you know, they do provide and protect, but then they need to be nurtured. So their mum was like, you know, looked after them when they was young, and they made them feel happy and content. And that was generally through food, you know, so it makes them kind of feel, they feel loved, they feel cared, they feel nurtured. So food is very important. So when I say belly, it is down to sort of like food and when you're looking after them. So if a man is poorly, obviously, I'm sure this is all women, but when you listen, when you've got men around, I mean, they do moan sometimes, don't they? You know, so they do need to feel loved and cared, you know, and you sort of have to pamper them. So when they are real, you know, you sort of not bow down to them, but you just like make them feel good about themselves, because, you know, a lot of men, they do work hard. I know us women do as well. I work very hard, as a lot of women do, but you know, we do need to look after men, and we need to do keep them happy, but also we need to be happy as well as women, because, you know, we're working now, and it's the modern day world, isn't it? We've got children, work, you know, it's very hard, and trying to get a good balance.
Goodness me, your perspectives and theory has been backed up research and science, and that's obviously where some of the problems may lie. You've said that for men, sex is the same craving that women have for chocolate, and women even prefer chocolate. So your BEB, the bits, is obviously the rude bits that you alluded to, the B, the belly you touched on, and the ego is the E, is that right?
Yes, that's right, yes, the ego. With men as well, I mean, it can be easily damaged. And but when I was talking about this, you know, like sex, it is important to a man, obviously. But the thing is as well, like, as you say, I think this is why I wanted to get it so women could understand it, is when women are craving chocolate, I mean, I'm terrible. Like, I want chocolate. I want it now. And it's a bit like men feel like that for sex, when they want sex, but, you know, that they urge, they need it now. And sometimes women, you know, we're tired, or we've got children, we're exhausted. And if we turn a man away, you know, like, oh, no, not tonight, you know, headache and that's okay. But if you keep doing it, then men are kind of like, as I said, their ego does get easily damaged, and they start blaming themselves. Oh, is it not me? Am I not doing this right? So I think sometimes you just need to sort of give like the man a little ego boost, perhaps once a day, just, you know, like, and you can use it to your own advantage.
So this isn't sex once a day you're talking about, this is ego boosting once a day.
yeah, no, God, no, absolutely, that's the ego boosting. So like if he's cleaning the car, your car or something, you're like, oh, you look really, you know, oh, like your muscles or your arm look good, or your bum looked cute in that or something, just a bit of fun, a bit of banter, but it also gives him a good feeling. He's like, oh, you know, she does love me, or it kind of like just makes the male feel really good. So a little ego boost once a day or every other day makes the male feel good. But again, they need to like reciprocate, you know, so it's kind of like mirroring each other. So I always think if you put out there what you want, and you give, like, you know, look after your man, and you kind of like make him feel good, then he's only gonna hopefully do the same, and like kind of like you mirror each other.
It's like the law of attraction, isn't it? So it's appreciating each other. So you've been dubbed the world's best matchmaking guru. You have 20 years of experience in the world of dating and relationships, and you've brought hundreds of couples together, or even happily ever after. Have some of yours got married? You've got a hat.
I was so lucky. Yeah, one of my clients, they made me a bridesmaid, which was so lovely. Yeah. It was really kind. So that was really special to me. And some clients have had children. So it is, I mean, I'll probably get more excited than when a client doesn't go on the date, because you've put so much time and effort into finding that right person for them, and you just want it to be, you know, as you say, you've got the chemistry and compatibility, and if those two match and it literally, there's sparks flying, you know, like it makes us feel great, and the team, you know, we all ring each other, so that's the right, because what they do is when they go on the date, I go and meet them before they have the date to make, because it is quite nerve-wracking, you know, going to meet a sort of a potential date for the first time. But because I've already met each couple, I already know them. I know what they're like. You know, one might be nervous, one's quite bubbly. But if I'm there as the intro and to kind of introduce them, they sort of feel a bit more relaxed. And then and then once, you know, they've had their chat and I'll get my bottle of fizz or something, they have a couple of glasses. And then they can go off and like sort of enjoy their evening. And then I'll ring the team and like let them know, right, you know, oh, that was great. They got on really well and it seems like sparks are flying.
So your theories that we touched on earlier, I mean, it might make people laugh or it might even make them cry. I know you like making people laugh, but some of the women out there may not in this age of equality. I know some men do cooking these days and a lot of, you know, the balance has shifted. But a lot of women might be horrified that those myths haven't changed in decades or 100 years, you know, that old cook in the kitchen and a lover in the bedroom. So it hasn't really changed that much. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of I don't know if I'll say that sort of Mary Pop, I kind of refer it to as Mary Poppins, and I just want to say this, Nikki, but you can bleep it out, and a whore in the bedroom. So what men are looking for is someone, you know, who can cook and like look after children and who's, you know, who's a great motherly figure, and then someone who's good fun in the bedroom. But as again, it is all about balance. So, you know, if the female's working and things like that, then, you know, the man needs to be Mary Poppins as well sometimes. You know, it's all about balance and working together as a partnership. So it's not all one-way traffic, absolutely not.
And some women have, you know, just as strong a drive as the men, don't they? So really, it's a modern twist on what men and women need and think. What about good conversations, soulmate, emotional intelligence and respect? Has that all gone out the window, or is that all underlined?
No. It is balance. And I mean, communication is absolutely key. You need to put the right people together. So as I said, like, it is chemistry, but really it's down to compatibility. So if I put someone, you know, who's really into architecture and history and things like that, and if I'm going to put in someone who likes, for instance, TOWIE and like not into that. So it's kind of like putting the right people together. So then they have got the right chemistry. So then they want to like have a conversation about maybe history or travel. So it's just is balance, but it's the right people, the right connections, and compatibility and chemistry are the two main ingredients. And if those don't work, then that's it, it's not going to work. You know, it might do for a short time.
Hobbies are really fundamental then for long-term interest,
long-term relationship, definitely. You know, working with clients and that, you know, people come into us and it isn't just about really date ready. So like, for instance, confidence is a big thing, but it comes down to sort of like four things. You know, someone might be might have had something happen in the past or childhood, so they might have been rejected, they might have been cheated on, or it could be like your body conscious, you know, you don't feel too good about yourself, or it could be even like physical. You could have, you know, it could be a teeth, you could have a scar, you could have had surgery, you know, perhaps even the horrible things, you know, the cancer, and you've had a breast removed and you don't feel confident in yourself, or it could even be down to education. So we kind of like work on all those are sort of like core four things, you know, with confidence in that. And we work on those with every client to sort of make sort of people date ready and feel good about themselves to then start dating. But if you don't deal with those elements first of all, then someone's then not date ready. So it is quite a lengthy process
and a very practical one, really. And obviously your skills of life coaching and image consultancy, bringing those into dating and matchmaking, is a much more all-rounded look at a view, isn't it? It's not just pheromones and it's not just algorithms.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, I mean, you know, you can get someone come in and like, oh, I'm looking for this, I'm looking for that, but, and I want this kind of male or I want this kind of female and that. But like, you know, we like to make sure it's fine sending them off on a date, but it's not going to sometimes work because they're not feeling good about themselves. I always feel you have to love yourself first before anyone can love you. So that's why we get people ready, that they feel good about themselves or they love themselves again. And, you know, and you should love yourself. You know, we're amazing species, you know, and we've got so much to give and we're so intelligent, you know, and how our body works and what we do. So I love people to feel really good about themselves, really confident. And then they can start the dating journey when we feel they're ready and that, like, they're kind of like tick all our boxes that they're feeling great.
And make them happy. And I know, you know, you've done research into this, but is this sort of high sex drive predominantly from the high-end, wealthy, successful power bracket of millionaires that you deal with? Or are their needs and wants different? Or do you think that goes up with the bank balance? Or is that common across the whole?
No, it doesn't matter really what where you come from, really. Everybody is different. I mean, I've got some guys with very high power jobs, you know, they've got 200-300 staff working for them, and you expect them to be quite, you know, maybe the sex drive, you know, they're really like everyday kind of person, and they're not. They've got quite low sex drive. So what we do as well is we really talk to the person, and I kind of, this is how I do it, I make people feel comfortable, and I just have a bit of a laugh and a joke with them, because opening up and talking to somebody who you don't know can be quite daunting. So that's why I always like to have a bit of a laugh, have a bit of a joke, tell them some funny stories or something that's happened to myself, and then we go into talking about sex, because, you know, it is an important element to some people, and some people it's not. So we need to get that balance right. So if I put somebody who's got like a high sex drive and wants, you know, sex every day to somebody who like wants sex once a month, it's just not going to work. So there's so much to, you know, like being compatible and kind of like all the important questions we ask. So we really need to find out in detail what that person likes, what makes them drive, what makes them feel good, you know, and sex is an important key factor to some people, and some people it's absolutely not.
And you're getting the men to talk about it. So well done you. So you literally find moguls, as your name goes, and introduce them to romance by the traditional matchmaking methods. I mean, what's the difference with online dating apps then? Are they completely worlds apart? Because you tailor the person to their unique needs.
Yes, we do. So what we do is we meet every single person. We kind of get to know them. So we follow their kind of life, you know, so what they do in the morning. So you get up, have a cup of tea, do you go for a run, you know, then do you go off to work? And then we kind of find out what their day's like. So, you know, some people might not finish till 8, 9 o'clock at night. And then it's quite difficult to then balance a relationship when you've got that working hours, you know, like, are you actually ready to date, you know?
Have you got the time? You know, so it's a lifestyle thing, really, isn't it? When you were young, you actually had your own online dating app company, didn't you? And
yes.
A friend of yours, not on your site, but on another site, got into a very dangerous situation. So is that what fueled you to want to do something that's safer? And you check, don't you? You check people's backgrounds.
Yes.
And
fraud. Yeah, absolutely. Something happened to her, and it literally frightened the life out of me, because I thought, if something happened on my dating site, and I would feel responsible, but I'd personally feel, and I'd feel awful. And that's why I just thought, I don't want anything like that to happen. And I'm a people person. I love people. So I just thought, and it was so impersonal, and I just thought, it's not what I wanted to do. So I took it off, and I just thought, I want to go and get trained. So I trained as, you know, a coach, life coach, relationship coach, etc., just so I could feel I could help them in whatever area they've got a problem with. You know, I can help them. But sometimes as well, you know, I might call in different experts. You know, we've got a great team who can help. You know, we've got LGBT, we've got the spiritual side, we've got everyone. We sort of cater for everybody to make every person who we work with, as long as we feel we can work with them. I mean, some people, I sometimes feel, once I've met them and interviewed them, I don't feel I'm right for them. If I feel I can't help you, I'm not. One, it's we put in a lot of energy with that client, so I just don't want to kind of like waste my time and their
yes.
time, really.
So you're really interviewing them and vice versa. So you've been described as the Cupid of millionaires with your Mayfair and Miami based agencies that you've still got, haven't you, even in this climate? It's real. That's so luxurious, and it's top price packages. I mean, a lot of our listeners, it will be out of their league. You know, your packages vary from 6 to 22,000, including personal trainers, Harley Street, skin, body experts. I mean, is that a bit too much money and trouble to meet romance, or that's back to feeling good about themselves?
Well, I can't say, you know, like if you're hoping to find like a long time partner or what have you, I'm kind of joking, but you know, you can't put a price on love. As I said, what we do is it isn't just like, you know, ticking a few boxes or sending you on a match. We actually get people so date ready, they feel confident, they feel great about themselves, and that might take a couple of months, you know, we're working with us and different experts to get them on that road. And then when they are ready, so for instance, like we might have someone who's really into horses and loves horses, so we would then go, and me and the team spend a day or two like with horses to like work out, god, you know, like if you've got a horse, you've got to get up really early, you've got to get up at 7 in the morning, you've got to muck it out, and then you've got to ride it, and then you might have to go to work, then you've got to come back, and then you've still got to like look after the horse. So that's difficult then to try and find somebody who fits into that lifestyle, or who likes, you know, likes animals. Some people don't, or not, you know, might not like horses and that. So what we do then is we'll go to like specialist like horse events, like dressage events or whatever they're kind of really into. And then we'd look for somebody who's suitable in that kind of area, you know, and you're paying quite a lot to get into some of these events, you know, or we're into like private members clubs events. So, you know, yeah, it has got a high ticket, but to be honest, the people who we, you know, we work with and introduce paid a lot of money to get into those kind of like those clubs. But again, we have to do sort of security checks, background checks and things like that to make sure whoever we do put you with, you know, they haven't got anything bad in their history.
I mean, you've worked with a lot of celebrities as well. I've seen pictures of you online with Boris Johnson, Simon Cowell and Piers Morgan. Have you helped any of them with their love lives, or are you not allowed to say?
It's all confidential, as you say, we can't, enough. You know.
Oh my goodness.
You can obviously tell straight away if people are going to be compatible or just sort of don't bother, but is it much harder in this world? I mean, it's fake news, identities, you know, love bombing, yes, where people trick you into falling in love, fake followers, catfishing, people turn up and younger or older, you know, it's harder, isn't it, to meet people?
It's so difficult sometimes. And sometimes, you know, people do meet on online, and that's great, you know, as you say, and I've heard some great stories. The thing is as well, there is some bad people out there, which is such a shame, you know, they ruin it for like the nice people. And as you say, you do get catfished and things like that, and it's just awful. So that's why we do what we do, and we do all the background checks to make sure whoever you're sitting in front of is that person and is the right person. But when you're dealing with celebrities as well, like, you know, they have to be so careful, because if they were online, for instance, you know, someone might be just with them because of who they are and what they can get out of them and things like that. So you just have to be so careful. But what we do is when we get a client, we don't ever tell the person. So say like if I was at the horse event, for instance, and I'll be looking for somebody, and I kind of know what I want in my mind, you know, what they're looking for. But then I might have to interview 30, 40, 50 people just to find that one right person.
You'll actually go up to people at these smart events and ask them if they're single.
Yes, well, so I mean, again, that can be very difficult as well. So we would like to sort of go around talking to people. So I've got myself and all my scouts as we go out.
Wow, so you're talent scouting at these fabulous events as well.
Yeah, but that's really hard, as you say, because you have to I'd never go up to somebody and say, oh, are you single? So we normally just have a conversation, and I'll go in and have a little bit of a joke or something, and kind of make someone feel relaxed. And I'll just and then they'll normally say, well, what do you do? And then it always comes up, and then obviously I discuss what we do, because I've got a couple of other companies as well. As you say, I kind of like break the ice that way, and then we start the conversation.
Gosh, I didn't realise you're literally scouting like that. So you're an entrepreneur. You managed a property company before entering the world of matchmaking 20 years ago, because you worked in an office with all men who talked constantly about women. And then you worked in one the other way round and thought you'd help. I love that.
Yeah, it was when I was 17, actually. It was really weird. My mum made me, you know, leave school, and she made me go and get a job in this office. And I thought, oh, I just knew that was never me. But anyway, I went in this office, and there's like hundreds and hundreds of women. And I thought, oh, no, you know, like this is. And they were all different ages, you know, like sort of 17 to sort of 70. And actually, it's probably the best thing that ever happened to me, to be honest, because I'd sit there and listen. I was only young, and I kind of understood, you know, they'd be talking about either they were single or in a relationship, or they've been married for 20 years and they're unhappy, or some were really happy. And so it was really like key to me, actually. And I was there for about 3 or 4 years. But my dad then ran, you know, like a property business, and you'd have like loads and loads of men. And then I'd get the same. They'd all be either moaning they're single, or they're in a relationship, or they're married. So it was brilliant. And I started setting people up then, just as a bit of fun, because I just loved it. So it was just, it was literally, I always knew I was put on this planet. I just knew when a youngster, when I was like 10, 11, to help people. But I didn't know what. And then it started to happen then. But I sort of thought, see what happens.
So that's brilliant that you actually love putting people together in that way. And you know, I know you've run several businesses. You know, you're a pretty capable, dynamic entrepreneur yourself. You must be a millionaireess yourself by now with the offices in London and Miami.
Well, as you say, like with Miami, I mean, we were really, like, things are moving over there, because we have lots of people flying from all over the world to see us, which is really lucky. But yeah, with COVID and that, I mean, we had one client literally flying in, booked, you know, the hotel, everything, the flights. They're a big reality star. And then 2 days after, obviously COVID happened, and so they had to sort of cancel their flight. So that was really frustrating. Oh, so, you know, so COVID has kind of like affected us, and even like the dating really, because, you know, normally we'd obviously, we'd go meet them and then we'd set up like a private date or dining or whatever they kind of were really into. And we'd have to sort of do, well, we first of all was doing like virtual dating on like online, but it just wasn't like, this isn't working. I never really liked that. That's why I stepped away. So we set up doggy dating. So so like you take your, because of people being in for so long and people starting to get anxious and things like that. So it's only just happened in the last sort of month or so, and you were able to sort of go out. So we were set up park date or something, and a couple would meet with their dog. You know, one might have a dog, one might not, but they like animals. And it kind of like, if you've got your best friend with you, with your dog, it kind of like takes away kind of the scary part, you know, so it's kind of like a little bit of fun. And yeah, it is a nice breakout. And yes, the thing is, I mean, if I took my dog, I mean, she'd be off eating everyone's sandwiches and she'd be a nightmare.
Have people been more romantic in lockdown because they're obviously no touching, no meeting, you know, they've had to go back to a traditional old writing like Jane Austen, or, you know, has it been more romantic? Have people said that to you, or more frustrating?
She's really weird. I've had some people like, yeah, absolutely loved it, and in a relationship, they're really happy. And, you know, as you say, it's kind of like brought their relationship closer together. And then some people were like, oh god, I need to get out, you know, you kind of like feel like you're boxed in. And you know, but the thing is, you know, with like working from home and that, it's good to sort of like have your, say your one room as, you know, your office, and then once you've finished at 5 o'clock, then go back out and sort of back into your step out. So I think that's kind of like some people, we've helped them do that, you know, like talk it through and how they felt. And definitely, you know, some of them have been a bit frustrated.
Definitely, I think you have a few more clients after lockdown that are coming to you newly single again.
Yeah, there has been a few inquiries, as you say, because people realize that actually they're not quite happy. You know, we try to give them a few tips, sort of like maybe just try this or try that, and you know, and talk as well. You know, communication is literally key to any relationship. We don't talk about how you feel, because a lot of women believe men know what they're thinking and what they feel, and they absolutely have no clue whatsoever.
So you're helping them to stay together initially if they can, but if they can't, you're saying you're here to help them on the other side, as it were.
You know, like at the end of the day, like I'd hate to sort of, I don't want someone to come to me, you know, like, and they're in a middle relationship, like, you know, try to sort that out first. And if you can, then all great, I'll give them a few tips. But if they can't, you know, like, step away and have a bit of time out. You know, don't jump in from one relationship to another. I really don't recommend that, especially if you've got children, you're separated, you've also at least have a couple of years out. And that's what I'm actually writing a book about. The second book's kind of more, I suppose it's not funny. It's very serious, and working with a lawyer. And we're kind of just like helping people just to sort of get how to start again, you know. And if you are going through divorce or separation, you're not sure what to do, because it is very difficult. You know, it's not easy. So just want to help people, really.
Because men, you know, not obviously we have male listeners as well, and we're all encompassing and inclusive here. Men tend to go straight to the next partner, don't they? Whereas women take time out to heal and process and cope with busy lives and children. And that's not necessarily the right thing to do for men either. You're saying take some time, reflect, reflect. And
yeah, you should do. You should take time out, you know. And for women, I always say at least 2 years. Really take that time. I know men, as you said, they sometimes want to rush into a relationship, but you know, you need to learn what's happened, why didn't it work. Look at it, look and see what you've learned, what happened, what went wrong, and then maybe either you change or you find the right person who's right for you and adapt, you know. As you say, relationships aren't easy, but you need to look at what's happened and, as you say, work on yourself and grow yourself and change, and then kind of then when you feel you're ready,
or you take your problems with you and transfer those on.
Yeah, that's right, because it's literally a vicious circle. That is a lot of, you know, a lot of problems, you know. As you say, you haven't dealt with them issues or them problems, or perhaps, you know, like someone's cheated on you on the past years ago, doesn't mean the next person's going to. But as you say, you've already taken them problems with you to your next relationship. You need to deal with those. You need to look at that and ask yourself questions and be truthful with yourself. And it's quite good actually to sort of just take yourself away, write down things, and just really go within and, you know, think about what's happened and why, what did you learn from that?
So do you think men are looking secretly for someone similar to their mothers that's familiar or not, not in your experience?
Do you know what? like, obviously, we talked a lot about that. And their mothers, obviously, a lot of them are very important, but they want someone who's going to be kind, caring, nurturing. Obviously, they do want all that. And they always want someone who can cook reasonably well, although I'm absolutely awful, but I have had some lessons. But yeah, and that's another problem as well. A lot of relationships, sometimes if you don't get on with the mother-in-laws, that can cause so much friction. And you know, we try to sort of work with them as well, like, and you know, maybe you might only have to see mother-in-law once a month, try and grin and bear it, because that's really like really difficult for a man as well with your mum. You know, they're very much connected, and if you don't get on with the mother-in-law, I mean, it can be really difficult, and it's not easy in the relationship when obviously the mum will pull you one way, the wife will pull you the other, or the girlfriend. So, I mean, I really do recommend that you try your best, you know, even if you have a couple of glasses of wine to bear, just try your best.
So what about your own romantic life then, Lisa? Have you got the best rich man on the planet for yourself?
I am very, very happy. Yeah, yeah. I've got the loveliest, nicest, kindest man in the world. Yeah, I love him to bits. Yeah. And he's helped me grow as well, you know, like personally. And yeah, I'm really, really happy. But I mean, it did take me a long time, and I've been in difficult relationships in the past, but which is brilliant because it's helped me where I am today, and it made me, I can understand then where relationships have gone wrong and what's happened and how people feel. And I think you have to understand what they've gone through and how they felt and what's gone wrong and what's happened. So although at the time I was like, oh, this is awful for me, but actually it's one of the best things because I've learned so much from it, and I can help and understand it.
That's brilliant. You say that though, isn't it, to say actually, you know, it's brilliant that you had bad relationships. I don't think many people think like that, but that's obviously the place that everyone needs to get to, so that's great. And are you married?
We were supposed to supposed to go away early, but obviously with COVID and everything, it hasn't happened, and we've been really busy with work. Like last year it was like, right, okay, we will do, but I think it might be end of this year or early next.
Brilliant. So you found your soulmate and your happiness. Well, that's a brilliant example, isn't it, for your work. Now, I know some of our listeners vary widely in age, and men and women, as I said, but for some of the younger women around 30 who see all their friends getting married or coupling up or getting a dog, and particularly in this climate, makes them feel worse. Have you got any tips?
Yes.
What should they do? Take the pressure off themselves?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think because they've put, that's the thing, like age, you know, like, and you put a date on things. Oh, God, I should be married by 29, 30, and, you know, or 30, whatever age you are, you know, like literally take the pressure off. Stop doing that, you know, because it's only you who you're hurting. You're not hurting anybody else. And, you know, look at where you are, who you are, what you've achieved and where you are. And like, kind of then what I will say is like, write out what you're actually looking for and be honest with yourself. What really do you want? Do you want children? Do you want a father figure? What are you looking for? And timing is great as well. Sometimes, you know, I know my mum used to, when I was like 27, 28, she's like, you're the oldest swinger in town, Lisa, you know, like you should be getting like married and that. And I used to then feel real pressure. I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, I am getting older and things like that. But actually it was probably the worst thing she ever said to me, you know. You can't, don't ever, ever, ever put a time on anything. Things will happen when it's right. And people come into your life. And if you're in a relationship, you're not happy, you know, work out if it's right. Look at the next 5 years, ask yourself, you know, can you see myself with this person? Is it right? Can I work on it? Will it be good? If it's not, as one door closes, another one always opens.
And that's interesting what you say about mothers, and mine was the same actually, to not put pressure on our daughters, you know, because I don't think that the sons get the same pressure. And I think it's because they want grandchildren or they want to be like their friends or whatever. So take that pressure off your daughters as well, actually, is a good message. That, yes, I hadn't thought of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. As you say, and I know it's difficult for women because obviously you do want children one day, but, you know, there's so many different things out there now we can all, you know.
It'll happen when it's meant to happen, won't it? Now, this Influential Women podcast that you're on now, it likes to help lift and uplift women to overcome their setbacks and challenges in their own lives, whether it's their health or personal life or coping with lockdown that we're all grieving and suffering trauma together, aren't we, and loss and all sorts of things of our
own.
Now, your own personal challenge growing up was when you struggled with dyslexia yourself, and actually putting you on this interview that we're doing on Zoom that people can't see, and obviously with your notes, I was suddenly thinking that's probably put you under, you know, a pressure as well. But you've achieved a book And you've got dyslexia, so that's amazing.
Yeah, thank you, Nikki. Yeah, I mean, as I said, you know, when we first talked, I said, like, there's four key things to, like, confidence and that, and one of them is, like, education. And when I was at school, I suffered badly with dyslexia, and there wasn't the help around back in my day, I have to show my age, but there wasn't the help, and I used to really struggle. Like, if I read a book, if I look at a book, it's literally like waves, it's like looking at the sea. I just can't, I can't take it in, and I knew I was it wasn't stupid, I was intelligent. So I really did struggle. And even like today, sometimes when I write emails and that, I probably have to take another extra 5 or 10 minutes and I have to read it through, look at it, make sure it sounds right. Because I think with dyslexia, you normally write how you speak, so but it doesn't always make sense. So and with writing this book, I wrote this book 3 years ago and I tore it up. No. I was like, no, I can't do that, and I just thought, no, I can't do it, you know, we'll probably won't make sense and people won't get it. And I battled with myself for a good few years, and I just thought, no, you know, I've got a wealth of knowledge, it's just my writing I was lacking. That was where my problem was. So I sort of worked on that for the last year or two, kind of like right, building up my confidence with my writing and kind of like grammar and things like that. And yeah, and that's why I thought, right, that's it, I'm writing a book, I'm putting it out there, because I've got a wealth of knowledge and I wanted to help people. So that's why I hope, right.
Brilliant. And you'll help other people listening that have dyslexia or know someone that does. You know, actually it is a challenge, and it's a private challenge, and your teachers made you feel worse about yourself, which was very unfair, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, they did. Yeah, they used to sort of say, oh, you won't get anywhere and things. I don't think they've been like nasty, but they're just like, oh, you'll end up behind the bar and that, which I actually did anyway, and there was nothing wrong with that. But you think, you know, then that knocked even more of my confidence. And I, you know, everyone at school used to sort of take the mickey out because he's in the bottom groups and things like that. And so I suppose, you know, I have my own battles personally. And, you know, I am proud of what I've done. I've written a book and, you know, it's picked up by a USA company, and, you know, the company's doing really well. I'm a mentor for the Prince's Trust as well, and I help other people. There's youngsters like myself.
Yes, definitely. Good for you. No, I think we're all unkind to ourselves, and even more so in this climate with more time to think and more time in our own heads. And we need to all just stop that, don't we? And be kind to ourselves. So what would you say to men and women out there with something difficult happening in their lives right now, whether it's their relationship or wanting a new relationship or not wanting the one they've got, or a health challenge or losing someone or grieving? What would you say to them, how to get through?
As you say, I mean, we are in a really difficult time, you know, as you say, like even financially or work, it's very difficult. I think you just need to take time out for you and look at and evaluate everything that's going on in your life and where you are today. And then maybe look, you know, like for the next 5, 10 years, you know, as you said, don't put too much like hardship on it, but like, you know, where would you like to be in 10 years? Would you like to be your own boss? Or would you like to run your own nail bar? Or maybe would you like to write a book? And sort of maybe set yourself a few goals. So then you've got something to sort of work towards, you know. And but again, don't beat yourself up and love yourself. You know, like when I first spoke to you, I said, you know, we are amazing. Like, you know, we're able to walk, run, breathe. We're very intelligent people, you know, on this planet. We're all hardworking, we're all intelligent, we're all just amazing species. So love yourself and love yourself for who you are, not what somebody else wants you to be.
Exactly, definitely, and particularly as you say, in relationships. And we're all here, we've all got a gift that we just need to find, don't we? So which strong women or men have inspired you in your life then? Obviously not that teacher.
yeah, not the teacher. It didn't happen when I was young, I must admit. But when I started hanging around kind of like-minded people, so when I was starting going to some of the events, you know, years ago, I would kind of be with people who were very successful, you know, and were, some of them were wealthy, some of them weren't, you know, some of them achieved like writing a book or, and I just thought, the people were really lovely, but they're just, they had a drive and they wanted to achieve. And I was always determined, I suppose, as a young age, because I felt stupid,
And I suppose with the dyslexia and that, I always just felt so determined. I thought, I'm going to achieve. I want to make a success of myself. So I suppose it was always my drive and my ambition. So from the terrible things that happened at school, I suppose that just made me, and I wanted to achieve great things, but it took time.
So everyone, and again, be kind to themselves. So your passions, you mentioned that you're a mentor in the UK for the Prince's Trust to help youths. Yeah. If there are any empowering female brands out there who'd like to partner or collaborate with our show, please contact me at nikkibannermanradio.co.uk and follow us on our private Facebook group. So any hobbies or other passions?
I was going to say hobbies. I try to do as many as possible, but it's difficult, as you say, because I've got three businesses. So we've got the matchmaking, which is obviously my number one priority. I absolutely love. But we have got like a TV and video production company as well. So again, I don't do too much with that because I just sort of oversee it and kind of come up with some like inventive kind of ideas around making. So, for instance, we had a technology company who had a gadget, and they're like, right, we need to make this fun and interesting. I'm like, right, okay. And I kind of made it, well, hilarious actually and comical. And so I do things like that, and I thrive on that, and I love that. So I suppose I love my work.
Yes, your work is your hobby, really, isn't it? Because you're so busy, and offices in different countries. And where have you been in lockdown?
So I've mainly been at home in that, and also I've got my dog. I love my dog so much. She's absolutely cool. She's a golden retriever. So I've spent a lot of time with my dog and family and my son. My son's a boxer as well, so... And that's quite difficult because obviously he's not been able to go in the gyms and things like that. So he's got like, is it like a human body thing? And he's like, Mum, hit me. I'm like, oh my goodness, it's absolutely draining.
Yes, be careful. So do you have a mantra for living your life? And has it changed at all in these recent times?
I think life's short. Do what you enjoy and love yourself.
I like that. And that does sum up what you've been doing. So what's your next goal then, Lisa, that new book that you mentioned?
Yeah, so just in the middle of writing the new book, so that should be out December. And then we've got an events programme to go around 2021. So we're doing sort of about 7 events all around the UK in the major cities. It all involves the second book. And then the following year, then we're kind of looking to go, do more events in America and sort of Canada with the next book. So yeah,
so you've got it all planned for the next few years, more than most people have got. Good for you. So lastly, what would you say to men and women listening out there to influence them for the future? Obviously your mantra and everything else.
I think have like go away, look within, and kind of like goal plan. If you sit in a I don't know, a rocking chair, and you're 95 years old and look back on your life, what haven't you done? What haven't you achieved? What you wish you had done? And that's what I like to think. I think if you look back and think, oh, I wish I'd done this, I hadn't done that. So I always want to go out knowing that I've done everything I could or done what I wanted to do.
And that's a very wise, actually, because then people... It's like a bucket list, isn't it? But it's saying if you want that, the latter years of your life, then think about what you're doing now in order to achieve that, which is lovely and motivating and will inspire everyone. So thank you so much to you, Lisa, for your time and inspiration. Thank you for talking about love and relationships and openly discussing your dyslexia, which will help others. And if there's any relationships out there that are suffering or worse or need help, please talk to somebody. And thank you for your research, your wisdom, and good luck with the new book. The Influential Women's Podcast is co-founded and host presented by exec producer Nikki Bannerman and award-winning Juliet Nichols, and produced by Saffron Mirza. Please subscribe for free and keep listening for more podcast guests and 3 years of back catalogue on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all your usual podcasting platforms. If you love what we do, please share and join our tribe for free with achingly human, real-life, uplifting, inspiring stories, and download straight to your inbox every other Tuesday.